Hi everybody, this is your host, Isaac. We got a Patreon / Rockfin / IlluminatiWatcher.com VIP bonus show. Why do I have three different places you can support without the commercials and crap? Well, that wasn't by design. That's just the way the cookie crumbled with the censorship looming over the head like the sword of Damocles. And that's just the way it's going to be until something settles in and maybe I'll have one platform with which I can focus on. But for now, all three. So anyway, you know the deal. You're already on the team because this is only for you, the supporters. The free feed losers aren't going to get to hear the truth, the whole truth. Nothing but the truth. Well, really, all today is, I'm going to be real brief. It's going to be a short show. I'll save you some time, but it's going to be a whole show of me saying, "Told you so." That's the vibe of the show. It's not what I intend, but it's a lot of, "Told you so." And it's not really like that, and I'll explain. If you watch that communist Bill Maher on Real Time with Bill Maher on HBO that I do, I like Bill Maher myself. Most of the time, I agree with him. He seems like a very, I'm not saying I agree with everything he says, but I like a lot of what he says. On Friday, January 29th, 2021, he had guests on the show, and that's exactly what we're going to talk about today. It was the Dark Horse Podcast. Let me pull up their names for you. It's Brett and Heather, right? What's their last name, though, you might ask? Weinstein. There you go. Brett and Heather Weinstein. Well, her last name is Haying. But I think they're married. They're both PhDs in biology. Smart people, right? And they published their podcast, Dark Horse Podcast, on YouTube. So you can check it out there because that's going to be part of the discussion in reference. So the references here are, we got Real Time with Bill Maher from January 29th, 2021. And then we also got the Dark Horse Podcast. If you want to go deeper into these subjects, they talked about the vaccine, the COVID vaccine, on episode 58, December 12th, 2020, I believe it is. You'll find it on their YouTube channel. They also have it on the Apple Podcast. All right, let's just get into it. This is the first clip. The first clip is from Bill Marshall. Let's take a listen. He's going to talk about why we can't talk about vaccines. And then we're going to talk a little bit about game theory. And let's take a listen, then we'll catch up.
Co-host the Dark Horse Podcast and co-author the forthcoming book, A Hunter-Gatherer's Guide to the 21st Century. Please welcome Heather Haying and Brett Weinstein. Hey. How are you two?
Doing well. How are you?
Thank you so much for being here. I must tell you, I've been watching your podcast and seeing you talking about vaccines, which of course is on everybody's mind, number one these days. And it is so refreshing to see people have a nuanced conversation. Among obviously medically sophisticated people who know a lot about this. You've had a lot of vaccines yourself, right?
We have.
I mean, because you've been to the tropics, this is your life.
We're as well vaccinated as anyone.
Right. But it's interesting, you constantly interrupt yourselves when you're talking about this to say, "Oh shit, I hope we don't get in trouble for saying this." Just because it's
kind of our job.
It's in trouble. You're just having a nuanced adult conversation as opposed to mere cheerleading. That's not a good place for science to be, right? When you're worried, when you're always looking over your shoulder like that.
Well, there's a problem built into the question of vaccines, which is that there's a difference between the public health analysis and the private decisions that people have to make about their own vaccinations. And the problem is one of game theory, where the best deal, given that vaccines are very effective, but they carry some risk, is for everyone else to get vaccinated, but you not to be. And if that happens, then you get the benefit of their immunity and you don't suffer any of the risk. But of course, that makes you a free rider. And so there is a tendency to underrate the risks of vaccines in order to get everybody on board with getting them, and then people who raise questions get demonized. So having that nuanced conversation is not an easy thing to do, especially when you know what's coming. You're going to be called anti-vax.
But it's science. We have to do it, right? I mean, I understand what's going on now. The free rider thing, I get it. And I would say, look, we're in a bad situation. We do need these vaccines. But just don't gaslight me, right? Just don't treat me as a child who can't hear the truth because it might scare me or scare other people. Just tell me the truth. That's all I want.
So yeah, much like my experience here, you know, I wrote that 80-page book, right? You know, I wrote the book about the vaccine stuff, and it was all very factual, very not very objective, right? I pointed only to actual articles, like scholarly type articles, studies, the official narratives, and tried to publish it on Amazon, and they said no. They blocked it. They banned me. Well, they didn't ban me. That's a misnomer. They blocked the book because, you know, I'm not Bill Gates out here. Dr. Bill Gates, apparently. But that's what I love, that they actually said this out loud, that, and this is what it drives the sentiment of the anti-vaxxers. This is what I understood once I started digging into it. All the anti-vaxxers see the data and the injuries and the problems, and they're screaming, hey, I was told this was safe. I was told this was effective, and it wasn't. And instead of their voice being heard or having a real critical look at it, they get shunned. And then someone who knows them says, hey, guess what? So-and-so in my family got injured too. And the sort of the devil's advocate response to that from, you know, the mainstream sources would say, well, yeah, there's injuries, but I mean, it's a very small percentage. But the overall ideas of discussing this, they're gone. Like, you just can't. It's now the boogeyman. It's like the taboo thing. And that's what drives the anti-vaxxers. When in reality, we need to look at it and say, okay, yes, you're not crazy. Let's take another look at it. Let's take an objective look at it. But the genie's well out of the bottle for that. Now, what was curious was that they presented it much more intelligent than I. But back in my first book, if you go back to 2014, A Grand Unified Conspiracy Theory, which you can get for free if you sign up for my email newsletter on IlluminatiWatcher.com. I'll give you the free link. Just download it. Because, I was very new in my journey. And curious enough, they haven't removed this book from the circulation on Amazon. Maybe they don't know I talk about the vaccines in it. Because this was a different time, different age. But listen to, I'm going to read you an excerpt here. And again, like, when I reread this first book of mine, I think, oh boy, this is cringy. This was not written well. Anyway, I talk about the vaccines, and back then, my view, as you know, I was a bit lukewarm to them. I kind of was like, well, I think they kind of work. Not really for me, I don't know. And the truth was, I didn't dig deep enough. This is what I wrote. If we didn't have vaccinations, then we would be experiencing periods of mass epidemics of all types. Polio is one of those epidemics that we've practically eradicated, preventing countless numbers of potentially crippled children. Measles, mumps, pertussis, smallpox, and tetanus are all practically non-existent due to vaccinations. And you know, sit tight, everyone. I know. Like I said, we went through this already. I know there's pitfalls in those arguments. If the number of people who aren't getting the vaccine goes below a certain number called the community or herd, then the diseases will come back. There are still disease outbreaks to this day when the community number dips too low. This brings me to a side point of proving the vaccinations could possibly be a conspiracy, but not for the reason that most people think. Most theorists believe vaccinations are a way for the Illuminati to push different agendas, such as population control, eugenics, brainwashing, etc. However, I think that The only conspiracy would be that they want everyone else to get the vaccines so that they don't have to. If there are Illuminati, it is in their best interest to keep the number of immunizations and vaccines at that level so they don't have to expose themselves to the downsides of the vaccines. The chances of a side effect of a vaccine are low, but there is still a risk involved. The Illuminati are most likely not interested in exposing their people to the risks. When you see celebrities coming out against vaccines, you'll almost always see a direct response by the media to shout down their efforts. This is partially due to what I mentioned earlier, in that vaccinations are beneficial to the group, so we must keep the community herd number above a certain value. So apparently there's an actual term for this, game theory. And it's like the elitists, they don't want to take them. They know there's risks. And curious enough, on their podcast, episode 58, they talked about it's a game of Russian roulette. And this was the analogy that I've been using for months. So I'm glad to see that someone smarter than I, came to that conclusion as well. And that's kind of what my final takeaway is on the vaccines. It's because you got the virus on one hand. What's the risk there if you contract it? And you've got the vaccine on the other hand. What's the risk if you take it? And what's curious, if you listen to their podcast, and they go through, I'm not going to play the clips from the podcast, they're much longer. But on the podcast, they talk about how we need to reframe our perspective of the virus. Because here's the truth. And I'll just give it to you from my perspective. I'm relatively healthy. I'm, 41 years old. I look at the numbers and I say, oh. Well, like only 2% of people in my demographic end up in the hospital. And less than 1% die. And that tells me, I'm like, well, that's not that scary. Right? But what he says is we need to reframe it because we have to understand what the virus does to the insides of your body. Like even if you live through it, even if you don't get hospitalized, they argue that there's a lot of damage that occurs from this virus that you're not going to know about till potentially years down the road. You've got like these long haulers, like something like 10% are long haulers. So what's the percentages of me dying? That's what everyone in the truth or community always says. Oh, what? We need to do all this for a 99.5% survival rate? Well, I mean, kind of, right? But like, if you extrapolate that into, I read it in a mainstream media news, so you know it's real. If you extrapolate that thinking into like hurricanes in Miami and it's like, well, it's only going to kill 1% of the population. Who cares? It's like, well, it's 60,000 deaths or whatever. I'm making that number off the top of my head. But, the point is like 1% on a large scale is a ton of freaking people. So I liked how Bill Maher, like that's the sentiment. He says, don't gaslight me. That's what the anti-vaxxers see. That's what I see too. I agree. They're gaslighting people. And I would argue, again, let's play devil's advocate. Let's pretend I'm Illuminate confirmed. Maybe I gaslight the people because like people are stupid. I'm sorry. People are stupid. In general, people are dumb. You know this. Because you're over here on the right team. So what do? You can't trust people. They're maniacs. So who do you side with? The Illuminati that take advantage of all of us? We get thrown out with the bathwater, unfortunately, because of that. Well, okay, let's move on to the next clip. This is the one where they actually talk a little bit about the technology behind this and how, it's not that safe.
And when you've discussed this, I don't know if you both believe that. I know you've said this, that you would prefer the AstraZeneca one, which is the old school one where they give you a piece of the old of the real virus, as opposed to the new mRNA one, which is exciting new technology, probably an improvement. But you say, this is what I've heard you say, that you would just like the older one because the new one is just so new.
Well, so just to be clear, AstraZeneca is not a fully traditional virus. It uses a method of delivery that is more traditional and has been used for longer.
But it's a piece of the real virus, right?
Well, you have the delivery mechanism, which is an adenovirus, but the adenovirus is completely unrelated to SARS-CoV-2. So they're just simply using it to get a piece of DNA into the cell, and then the cell manufactures pieces of the coronavirus, the spike protein, which then hopefully the immune system learns to recognize. But there's no danger of getting SARS-CoV-2 because the virus being used to deliver it suddenly comes back to life. This virus doesn't carry that capacity.
Right.
And, you know, we have a long evolutionary history with adenoviruses. They cause things like the common cold. So it's not very serious, even if something were to occur. So in some ways, just the simple fact that it's using a virus to deliver the DNA rather than a novelly manufactured coat of lipids, these nanoparticles, which is what the mRNA vaccines are using. That's a novel technology. We don't know what its implications are because it hasn't been used in humans for even
a year. But just recreate a little bit of that conversation for me about just the new, I mean, you're a scientist. You know this stuff real well. You're just saying, right? I mean, I've heard you say it's not science fiction, it's science fact, the old one.
So just to be clear, again, the AstraZeneca vaccine is not a traditional vaccine. It uses a new technology, but it also uses an older technology that we have more experience with. So it is not a fully traditional vaccine. I would, you know, there are also some of those in
development. But that's the one you would prefer.
But it, you know, the older it is, the more commonly we have already used it, the more likely we all should be to trust it simply because the data already exist. Right, you know, mRNA vaccines are brand new. Until 2020, they had never been in humans before. And you know, we are hoping, both of us. You know, as you say, we are scientists. We've got, you know, we've got more vaccinations than almost anyone, given that we've got, you know, yellow fever and rabies and all of these things because of the work that we have done. Yep. Brett actually has worked on bats, and so you know, in order to work on bats in the neotropics, we have, you know, we've been vaccinated against rabies and yellow fever and a number of things that most Americans never run into.
Now, I will refer to you to listen to their full podcast if you really want to go into why they're saying, like, hey, it's not that safe. What they mean is the only thing they'll commit to, because, again, they're scientists. The assumption we're making is that in the long term, these mRNA vaccines are going to be safe. And that's what they're saying. It's just an assumption. They have no clue. In fact, on the vaccine, they say that, I believe it's they say that the way they explore if a vaccine is going to be safe in a long term, for a situation like this where, you know, they only did the trials in summer 2020, what, are we going to wait 50 years to see what the effects are? What they do is they take animals and they pump them with mega high doses of the vaccine, and they see how that affects them. And if it's like reasonable, minimal amount of damage, they're like, okay, they're safe. That's what they do. Which they even say, like, that is not an accurate model for how to predict long-term effects. So that's the truth of the matter, is you're playing Russian roulette. You really are. Which chance do you want to take? Which chance do you want to take? Do you want to take the new technology? And they say it's new technology in the sense that what they got to do is they've got to get this instruction into the cell of your body so that it can make these, you know, these antibodies against the COVID. So for them to do that, they need to protect this instruction, because your body, once it injects the thing into you, the vaccine into you, your body will try to destroy everything in it, including the instructions. But the instructions got to make it into the cell. How do you keep it alive long enough to make it into the cell? Well, you surround it with lipids, synthetic lipids, fat, basically. And this is what their argument is like. These are synthetic nanoparticles, nano meaning on the scale of nanometers. It just means they're extremely tiny. They're injecting synthetic nanoparticles into your body. Nanoparties. It's a nanoparty in your body. And that's what they do. And they say, like, that's never been done before. And I'm not trying to scare you from the vaccine. I'm just telling you what they said. And I think they ultimately resigned to the same ideas that I do, where it's like, which road do you want to take? Which risk do you want to take? Or you take path number three, and it's like, okay, I'll just isolate until everything's gone. Well, that's not good either. Like, I'm for sure not taking that path. But maybe you do, you know? I don't know. Your choice. Your life, your choice. Okay, next topic. This one's fun. They talk about how this thing was created, the virus. The virus was created in a lab, yes.
You mentioned bats. Let me ask you about this, because we've heard a lot recently about the fact that maybe the virus did start in a lab. Yep. Let's talk about that. The fact that there is this lab, I think it's the only one in the world quite like it, in Wuhan, where it started. It would almost be a conspiracy theory to think it didn't start in a lab.
You would think.
Right? And that theory was demonized at first, that, oh, it can't. That, come on, that's conspiracy thinking, that it would started in a lab. But it certainly is a 50-50, would you say that?
It's far more likely than that. As a matter of fact,
right.
I said, I think in June, that the chances that it came from the lab looked to me to be about 90%.
Okay.
So this was never a conspiracy theory. In fact, that term is simply used to make it go away. It's an obvious hypothesis that is in need of testing, and we are only now, a year in, getting to the point where we can discuss it out loud without being stigmatized.
Okay.
A big part of the problem, of course, is that we are so politicized, we are so polarized and partisan now as
right.
a country, that if the wrong guy proposed this to begin with, and for half the country it was the wrong guy, then the rest of the country says, no way, no how, we're going to call that a conspiracy theory, and we're never going to revisit it. And the fact is, that's not how science works. That is not science. You need to say, I've got a pattern, I'm going to make some observations, and I'm going to consider every possible explanation on the table. And did it leak from a lab? That was clearly from the beginning a possibility.
Okay, so let me ask you this. At first I was going to say, oh, when they make me get this, I want the mRNA because it's new. I feel like it's an improvement over the old ones. Then I heard you say, no, even though you're a little squirrely about it tonight, I heard you say you want the one where they have a little piece of the virus in it, the way they did it for many, many years. Then I heard about the lab. And I was like, wait, if they made that one in the lab, do I really want a little piece of that virus in me? Is it possible there's something in a lab-made virus that is different and would make a vaccine different than the ones we've had for decades, which were made from viruses that occurred in nature?
Well, this is a complex topic. The adenovirus...
That's why you're here.
Right. The adenovirus is one that you have history with, or at least viruses in that family. You are very unlikely to have any evolutionary history with beta coronaviruses, which are the ones that SARS-CoV-2 comes from. So just from the point of view of what unexpected might happen if we give you the adenovirus vaccine, it's much less likely to be dramatic than lipid nanoparticles, which is what the mRNA vaccines are packaged in. As far as the little fragment of DNA in question, or the fragment of RNA, they produce the same proteins. So the target is the same. The virus is wrapped, the SARS-CoV-2 virus is wrapped in spike proteins, and the idea is to give those spike proteins to the immune system so that it recognizes them immediately if you ever get infected. And from that point of view, the vaccines that are currently available are equivalent. They're all delivering...
So you're not worried if it was made in the lab that it would be different? That a vaccine would be different, made from that came from a lab instead of nature itself, which, I mean, the lab is taking nature itself, of course.
Yes.
Doesn't concern you.
All of our best tricks, we are borrowing from nature. And in this case, we are just simply taking that spike protein and figuring out how to get it into your cells so that your immune system gets a chance to see it.
So if...
Now, you hear the vagaries when they talk about, well, it depends on who came up with this idea, and politically it got shouted down because the wrong guy came up with it. I think they're referring to Steve Bannon and Trump. Because Steve Bannon's been a big proponent of this. In fact, there was some smear campaign articles on the mainstream media after Bill Maher aired, and they were like, Bill Maher hosts Bannon conspiracy spouters, you know, trying to talk bad about it, but like, I don't know. And I certainly don't know. What the hell do I know? I know I don't trust the bio lab, the level 4 bio lab. And we talked about this. And you hear how they listen to Bill Maher, my man, talking about how they're demonizing conspiracy theories. And they're basically saying like, well, I don't know if this one's a conspiracy theory. Could it be a bioweapon? I mean, these are big questions with big repercussions that we gotta be careful with. But I talked about this back on April 28th, 2020, one of the first shows I did on COVID conspiracies. I don't remember the title. But I talked about this gain-of-function testing, and I'll briefly summarize the points for you. Well, actually, let me play the next clip. Yeah, I'm going to play the next clip because they talk about the gain-of-function testing that happens in a lab, and that'll give us a primer. I'll go back, and I'll tell you all about it.
But let's assume that the Chinese were not trying to create a bioweapon. It's possible that they were. If they were, they did a hell of a job because they shut down the world. But let's assume they were just studying this for eleemosynary reasons. We want to have them. But it got out. Maybe like on a worker's, you know, it's like when the busboy doesn't wash his hands before he goes to the bathroom and, you know, then you get food poisoning. But for the whole world.
Right.
Right. That's what happened. Okay. So that got out. It raises the question, should we ever be studying viruses in labs this way if we're just going to create the problem that we're trying to...
Well, that battle was taking place before the COVID-19 epidemic. There was there were two factions. There was a faction that said we had no choice but to study these viruses and, in fact, to engage in what's called gain-of-function research, where we turbocharge the viruses and make them much more dangerous than they are in the condition we find them. And the argument was that we had to do that in order to know what they would be like in their dangerous form and could perhaps prepare by generating a vaccine. And then there was another faction that said, actually, we're likely to create exactly the disaster we fear. And what was missing from this discussion was a proper evolutionary analysis. Now, the fact is, there are lots of viruses that can escape from nature and infect people, but in general, they don't have a second trick. That is to say, they can infect you, they can make you sick, maybe they can kill you, but they can't jump to the next person. And so what's really conspicuous about this virus is that it had both tricks from the get-go. It infects people and it jumps from one person to the next with no explanation.
And now it seems to be having a third trick, which is it's mutating, which, of course, is not new. Viruses are always mutating. That's why flu shots are very often so ineffective. Right. Because you're getting the vaccine for, that's why I never wanted a flu shot, for the one that was around last year. Sometimes they're as little as 10% effective. But, okay, so this one is definitely mutating. We have a lot of them now.
Yep.
The South African one, the British one, they're all over the world now. I heard at the beginning of this that they usually get milder viruses as they mutate. Because they want to survive. They don't want to kill anybody. Then they got no host.
You might expect that a virus that did emerge from a lab that was doing gain-of-function research would precisely not do the thing that wild-type viruses would do, that it might exactly do what we seem to be seeing, get more virulent, get more pathogenic.
You think it's getting more virulent, the mutations?
If you think about it, the expectation amongst those who have been seriously investigating the question of whether this is a gain-of-function lab escape virus, is that the virus would have been passed through either animals in the lab or tissues in the lab in order to use evolution to re-rig it. And that means that effectively tension was put on the virus, pulling it in the direction of certain things. Some of those things were intentional, like infectivity of human cells, which may have given it extra capacities like this this furin cleavage site that no other virus like this has, but SARS-CoV-2 does. So in any case, in an attempt to give it these extra capacities, lots of things will have been inflicted on the virus, including things that we don't think about. So many of the characteristics, the fact that this virus attacks so many different tissues in the body does not seem natural. The fact that it does not, at least at the beginning, did not seem to transmit outdoors nearly at all is very conspicuous. I mean, after all, most animals live outdoors. So a virus right. that seems to be adapted to indoor transmission is a bit conspicuous in this case. But I think Heather's point is, all right, you take the tension off of it. You let it go into the human population. It spreads out. We've now got many millions of individuals with infections. It's now going to move in the direction that makes the most sense for it rather than the most sense for the researchers. So, yes, I think there's every possibility that what we are seeing is a response to this virus now being free to explore evolutionary space.
And the common theme is we need an evolutionary perspective on the research that's being done. It seems that there are certainly perverse incentives to, once you start doing research, to try to keep doing that research regardless right. of whether or not it's still good for humanity, right? And, excuse me, whether or not this virus emerged from a lab or not actually has implications for how it is likely to behave now that it's out in the world and how, therefore, we should imagine how likely these things are going to be going forward.
So we should have been paying attention to the lab theory at the beginning, but we didn't because it was politicized, really, is the moral there.
Well, in fact, if we had paid attention to it and recognized just how likely it was, then we would have surely put pressure on the Chinese to reveal what they knew about
right.
this. And if we had had that information, we would have been in a much better position. We would have known what to expect, and we might have had a better approach on the vaccine front. Instead, we've been fighting a clearly false notion. All the things that we were assured were true at the beginning, that this was a bat virus that infected a
right.
pangolin and then escaped through a wet market, that's all known to be false.
Right.
The only part of that that stood is that originally this virus, or the major part of it, clearly came from a bat, but the rest of it has just come crashing down.
Well, I was hoping to end on a happier note, but I thank you for the nuance in the conversation. All right, Brett and Heather, thank you very much. Time to meet our panel.
So yeah, again, like this is like the first time I've heard someone in the mainstream talking about this kind of stuff. Back on April 28th, I talked about this gain-of-function testing. And I said, here's the notes from it. What happened was back in 2017, we lifted a moratorium on the studies of the gain-of-function testing studies in the labs. Right? We had previously banned it. And if you look at the timeline, the history of old Fauci, back in 2012, he supported it. He was like, yeah, they're dangerous, but we need to do it. Because, you know, he's a science nerd. But then backed off of that in 2014, right? Because in 2014, they started this moratorium. They said, you know what? We think it's a little too risky now. Well, then back in 2017, they decided, you know what? Let's do it again. Fire up the risky gain-of-function studies where we accelerate the evolution of a virus in these animals, something that can never happen. In hundreds of years, we'll never see it, but why not introduce it to our world? And you know, and this is the problem with science and technology thinking. It's like, well, we've got the protective measures in place. It'll never leak out. It could never possibly do it. Look, we have this technology and it, you know, you just follow the rules. And like the big assumption, the false assumption they make is that humans have no error. Humans would never forget to wash their hands. Take the lab coat off before they walk out. And that's the problem. Now, let's see. What else could we talk about with the gain of function? Well, I'm looking at my notes from the show. We quickly, from what I'm reading on my notes, I quickly went from gain of function testing to talk about the sketchy World Health Organization, which looks like they had a one world concert back then with Guess who? Lady Gaga, yes. Yes, everyone's favorite Illuminate confirmed performer. Which raises a lot of questions, you know. Are we heading towards the Great Reset? I mean, especially if you listen to my show I did with SMQ on the GameStop thing. And that whole GameStop thing, is that coordinated by the powers that be to push us down to the Great Reset? I don't know. Time will tell. And here's another big question. And that's it for the clips, by the way. We're segueing into the in conclusion part of the show here. Here's a big question for me. Look at how much money they're spending on testing and vaccination. I just saw that they are dropping a couple hundred million on a 15-minute COVID test on top of the millions already spent on various tests. And I'm not saying don't do it. I'm not saying that. But I'm just saying if you focused this level of effort into disease prevention, immunity boosting, general real health, I wonder what the results would be. But, you know, that's communism, that's socialism. You can't pay for everyone's health. Not everyone cares. Why would you do that? So I get it. On the other hand, I get it too. But it's funny because I actually read an article about how much we spent on the vaccine, and it was like tenfold what we've spent on therapeutic drugs used to treat COVID. Because that could be another option. Another option besides vaccines is, well, let's just find drugs that help people defeat this thing quickly. But we spent something to the order of 10 times as much on the vaccine, which raises the questions of where are the priorities? And you got to follow the money to look at the priorities. And I can't help but see that this is all some Great Reset nonsense. The Great Reset includes vaccinations out the arse. You know, it includes the destruction of the financial system, specifically the U.S. dollar. The World Economic Forum specifically calls us out in America. And and then you've got all these, like if you watched, I watched a video the other day by Dollar Vigilante, and he's talking about this doom and gloom for 2021, the Great Reset plan, how they will destroy everything and usher us into the Great Reset with the communist redistribution of wealth. Seems a little over the top. But maybe, right? I don't know. I mean, all the signs are there. I'm not going to argue that. But I don't see it. I don't think that America in general is just going to be like, okay, cool, let's do that. Let's do universal basic income. And you know, here's the title to my car. Like, no way. Maybe. Maybe. I don't know. There's lots of things we could say no way that really happened. So, but anyway, the Dollar Vigilante, he's talking about cryptocurrencies. Oh, you know, and cryptos are great in some ways because it does get you off the fiat of the U.S. dollar, because they're saying that if they sign this $2 trillion COVID relief bill, it's going to increase the inflation of the U.S. dollar, and it's going to push us towards the collapse, the financial collapse. That coupled with the Reddit nerds, and there's different arguments for that. They say, well, that's all smoke and mirrors, because the reality is we've been living in a bubble, and this is a false reality anyhow. They want to blame it on millennials and Reddit nerds. They're going to be able to see they crashed the system, when in reality it was the Wall Street that crashed the system, and the greed that crashed the system, and hyperinflated everything. That's one theory out there. They want to blame it on us, and then guess what happens? They're going to say, you know what, these are domestic terrorists, and you know what, this whole system needs revamped. Let's give it all to Klaus Schwab and the boys, and they'll make sure everyone gets what they need, because this isn't working. I don't know. And in fact, like, you know, I always say, well, the truth is always right. as much as I shit on them. When I talked about Bitcoins and cryptos, for years I've been talking about them, and I'm always saying, yeah, I mean, the purpose is it's a trustless system. Because right now you've got trust in your bank. You've trust that if you need all the money you've got in there, you can go in there and get it. They'll hand it to you. But then if they make a run on the bank, and they got, because they don't have all that money in there. They don't have a big vault with millions of dollars in it. It's all fake numbers on a screen. So if they run on the bank and you go in there to get your monies, they might not have it. And then we slide into a depression. But the cryptos, there is no bank. They're yours on your phone. And I've always been real skeptical of that and thinking like, well, God, I don't know. This is putting your faith in something different entirely. In man's technology that I don't trust. But then, then I had some drama with my bank. I was trying to get a sponsor for my show, Wind and Sea Coffee. He is on Instagram and he sells CBD coffee. And he's a vet, right? We bonded on, I don't know if you saw the Rockfin thing. I had him on my Rockfin show because it's like a not conspiracy theories and unpopular culture sort of thing. We just catch up, we do some military talk, you know. He's just a young man trying to start this company. And he donates to veterans, to One More Wave, a surf foundation to help vets with PTSD and traumatic injuries. And I liked his mission. And I was like, yeah, bro, let's hook something up, man. And I found out, long story short, I found out through my bank that I'm not allowed to do that. They're like, well, you can't have a business account with us then. I said, what? They said, yeah, he deals with CBD. Can't do it. I said, CBD's legal. He's not selling the one with the THC in it. I said, we don't care. That's the policy. And I said, I can buy it legally. It's not illegal. And I got into an actual multiple. I went Karen on that ass with managers. I was talking to managers yelling. Moderate yelling, not crazy yelling. Passionate discussion. Because I was like, I said, bro, one of your branches is inside a grocery store that, I'm not even joking, 20 feet from the branch, I can buy CBD lotion. How is this fair? This is hypocritical to its core. Because their whole problem is, because I said, well, what if I don't accept money? What if I just want to do it for free? So the goodness of my heart, and they said, no, you can't market CBD products as part of your business. You can't do it. I said, so if I want to market Wind and Sea Coffee, who's on Instagram and on the website, he's got a website and he sells great coffee. If I wanted to market him, even for free, I'm not allowed to do that. They said, no. I said, you guys have a branch inside a grocery store where they sell CBD oil. You've got an affiliation with them. How is this fair? And they said, sir, this is the policy. I was like, oh my God. But that was when it hit me. It's when it hit me and I said, my God, now I get it. I always was like, yeah, but I trust my bank. I trust my bank more than I trust myself to remember the emails and pins I set up with this cryptocurrency. What if I lose my phone? Because if you lose your cryptos, your password, it's gone. You're ass out. There's no one to call. You're done. And that was always my beef with it. I thought, well, God, at least with the bank, I can walk in and say, hey, where's my money? But then I thought, oh, no, I've been yelling at these people. What if they lock me out? They could do that. They don't. Could they? I don't know what they could do. Anyway, it's scary business. So anyway, I don't want to get off on a tangent on cryptocurrencies, but if you pay attention, since my discussion with SMQ, there's lots of weird developments going on with all that. So, you know, just, I don't know, try to be smart. Try to keep a level head. Don't get too scared, but be a little fearful in the sense that you got to be cautious. I don't know what the right answer is. I'm not a good finance guy. Clearly, I'm not good with my finances. Still chomping away at my debt. But anyway, what I wanted to talk to you about was the COVID thing. And if you want some rational discussion on the vaccine, like a real adult with a consciousness and a brain that can think, check out the Dark Horse podcast. I believe it's episode 58. I believe it was December 12th, 2020. That they have a good discussion on it. And they come away with the same sort of conclusion I did, which is why I'm talking about them, because they agree with me, therefore I like them. It's more Russian roulette than it is anything. And that's just like a sort of grounded way of looking at it. You know, it's not the end of the world either way. Maybe, kind of, sort of. But it is a choice we gotta make. So arm yourself with the information and make the best choice you can. Do your best, right? Alright, thank you for your support. Again, this was a bonus show. A little bonus goodie. Because I appreciate you guys as supporters, you guys and girls. Shout out Emily, sent me the cool shirt in the mail. The challenge shirt. I did an Instagram live the other day wearing it. I love it. It's great. Maybe MTV will reach out and give me a slot. Make me live my dream on MTV. All right. Okay. All right. Thanks for your support. Until next time, stay woke.